Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Be here at the Waldorf, where folks just sit around all day. Join the crowd, relax at the Waldorf, and croon their cares away. No shock. They like jazz, but in small doses. No rock, pop, and you could cause thrombosis. Don't sing loud when you sing at the Waldorf, or find somewhere else to play. Uptown jazzy, hip with propriety. Downtown, just a whiff of society. Tells you when you riff to be quiet at the Waldorf. Uptown, we got bums, but we scaffold them. Downtown, we got drums, but we muffle them. Nobody who comes would be ruffled at the Waldorf. Well, ain't it swell, doing swell at the swell. Swellest of hotel of them all. Uptown, it's a blast that we're giving you. Downtown, that's the last thing we'd ever do. We're not loud or fast, we're just lounging at the Waldorf. Lounging at the Waldorf. Lounging at the Waldorf.
You can clap. Yeah, you can clap. We generally don't allow clapping on the show because there's like four of us and like nothing is sadder than like two people clapping for one person. It just actually sounds really, really rude. Rich Jenkins, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you, Greg.
And we also have like, this is not the entire Jenkins family. This is
two more.
But we met you or know of you through your daughter, Cassandra Jenkins, who was on an earlier episode, which you can go back and check from the archives. Update yourself, educate yourself, because we'll probably try to avoid covering a lot of the same ground. Or get it from a different perspective, anyway.
Yeah.
But they're in studio as well. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, buddy. Chin chin.
32.
30 deuce.
I don't think anyone says that.
Even numbers.
I say it.
Even numbers are the best? Yeah, yeah. What happens
really?
In odd years?
They're odd.
You lie.
Yeah.
You lie.
Yeah, it's a great way to start the show. Thanks to everyone and all the birthday wishes. I guess I realize it only really happens like once every 7 years that we would have our birthday on a show.
Sometimes. It gets kind of funny with the leap years.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah.
We'll look at calendars. We'll do it off air.
Yeah.
But I'm one half your host. I'm Darren Bresnitz.
Greg Bresnitz. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
This has been a while since we've done a show together.
Then it will be another while after this.
Man, can't hold this down.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So, as we have mentioned over the years, there are the people behind the scenes that help make this show happen. And we always shout them out, and it's always at the end. But we wanted to do, for a very special birthday, hangout, celebration, to two of our favorite PR people, Marcus and Shannon from Bullfrog and Bound. Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you want to swing that microphone around? There we go. Why don't you guys introduce yourself? Tell us what you do.
I'm Shannon. I work for Bullfrog and Bound. Sorry, I'm having trouble with this microphone.
There we go.
And I'm Marcus. I work with Shannon at Bullfrog and Bound.
Now, what do you guys each do there?
So Marcus and I are lucky enough to be on the same team.
Yes.
Awesome.
Which I know you guys are familiar with the rest of our cast of characters we have over there. And I am an account coordinator. Marcus is an account executive. But we work with a lot of chefs based here in New York, in D.C., Miami, Philadelphia.
The whole Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
All right, so let's go back to the very beginning. So that's what you do now. How did your journey to food start? Where did you guys fall in love with the culinary?
I heard you grew up eating. Is that correct? Do I have my facts right?
Yeah. Yeah, but it could have gotten into breathing PR as well. Yeah.
Oh, I did. True. I was a huge nerd when I was a kid, which not much has changed since then, but I grew up watching a lot of Iron Chef. So after school, I'd always go home and watch that. Then after high school, I went to culinary school and was a pastry cook for 7 years.
Whoa.
So I did that in San Francisco. I worked for Emily Lucchetti, and then I moved to the East Coast to work for Jean George.
Who?
Jean George. He's like this little French guy.
Favorite pastry to make?
Oh, to make? I don't know. Probably anything fruit. I'm more of a fruit dessert girl than I'm a big nectarine person.
Wait, then what's your favorite to eat? Are those two different answers?
No, I mean, I think most pastry chefs do say chocolate desserts, like a dark chocolate type of thing, but...
How much butter have you used your entire life?
Oh, I eat so much butter. When I was a kid, I used to eat, like, the cubes of butter off the table.
So you were built for this job?
Yeah.
Built.
I still go to Eataly and buy $3 Vermont Creamery butter and eat it with radishes at our office all the time.
It's so good. But that's a meal. You can order that.
Yeah.
Marcus, sir?
You know, I did not go to culinary school, but I was born and raised in New York, and if there's two things I think New Yorkers appreciate, it's a good apartment mm-hmm. and a good reservation. So mm-hmm. I spent, you know, a lot of time eating out, and when I was ready to get into PR, food PR kind of was like a natural choice.
Did you have better reservations than an apartment?
You know, I had bad reservations and bad apartments.
Okay. What was the first, like, good reservation you got?
I got you. Thank you.
Hey, twins. Twins on their birthdays. What was the first reservation you got, both of you,
where you're like, nailed it?
Where you're like, I'm in, or I've arrived?
I think mine was probably at 11 Madison Park.
Ooh.
It was a really cool one. I went for a friend's birthday a few years ago and had, I think it was the first, one of the first meals that I was really blown away by.
Now, was that pulling strings, or did you get it on your own?
We made the reservation through one of the sous chefs there.
Okay, fair enough.
Had a 5-hour-long meal.
That sounds about right.
In the middle of August. It was a little hot afterwards.
Did you stay awake the whole time?
Yes.
Marcus?
And I would say ABC Kitchen when it first opened.
Ooh, your old boss.
Yes, he has lots of restaurants these days.
He does indeed. how was that meal?
It was delicious. It was really tasty. And that's the kind of food I really like.
Yeah. So for people who can't get reservations, who are like for like, as we're talking about, you know, Noba opening up in Japan, it's like, who's going there? But what tip would you give to someone if like they're not on the inside game, they don't know things, like how would you recommend that they...
Patience. I think people need to be a little bit more patient. Like they want to go to the restaurant when they want to go to it, but if a lot of these restaurants, if you make a reservation in advance, they're not going to cancel your reservation. So if you want to go to some new super hot restaurant, wait 2 weeks, like put the reservation in and then go, because then you're definitely going to have one.
You know, also be nice to the person picking up the phone at the restaurant. Yeah. Just be nice.
We were at Pacificana today. I don't know if you ever seen the door woman at Pacificana, which is this giant dim sum place out in Bay Ridge. I mean, I realized we could have just like slipped her like $20 and been really nice. Yeah. Sat very quickly.
Yeah.
So speaking of patience, you know, I'm sure you work in varying levels of chefs, but when like a chef kind of comes in for their first time doing PR, what type of like expectations do you set for them, or what type of like guidance do you give a new chef who has gone from like the I can't handle this, I need a...
Can I put an addendum on that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like better working with a chef who's just getting started or one who's been established who realize they need PR?
I mean, that's kind of a tough question because there's so many different facets to every client that we have. I mean, we do work with chefs that have been doing this for 20 or 30 years already. And then we also work with people who are launching their first restaurant and need very different things. So whether it's like the beginning of a restaurant, at Bullfrog, we do what's called like a tadpole campaign.
Yeah.
It's like a short-term client. So like when they're starting a restaurant, doing all of their opening press, making sure the messaging's correct, like what we're handling for them. So it kind of changes.
I mean, what are the biggest challenges of launching a restaurant? Something that we may, I mean, obviously there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of stuff, but something that people may not think about as being like, this is actually why I'm a professional and why this is what we're paid to do.
There's a lot of restaurants in New York City.
Yeah.
And it's extremely competitive. And a lot of these chefs, they put their all into it. They liquidate funds and savings to open this restaurant. So they have a lot riding on it. And there's a lot of people you have to reach out to. And, you know, there's a lot of media in New York City. And you have to be incredibly organized in order to successfully launch that restaurant. Because the chef is going through a really hectic period. Usually, you know, late hours, recipe always testing, never by their computer. So you have to be organized for the chef.
So take us through how many months out. So I'm opening up a new place. How many months out? What's the game plan?
Where are you opening up?
Oh, Brooklyn. What does that matter?
Well, there's, you know, we know Brooklyn like the back of our hand probably, but if you were opening up in
the Upper East Side or Upper West Side, you're going to get a very different clientele up there, and you're going to be wanting to reach out to a very specific set of media who are going to
reach
blogs. The people that not necessarily mommy blogs, but like the people that you want to reach out to are the people who live in the Upper East Side or the Upper West Side, and the people that are going to go to that restaurant and spend money are going to be somebody very different than like somebody in Deep Bushwick or Bay Ridge.
Okay, so let's talk Brooklyn. So we're opening up this new area called Williamsburg. Don't know if you've heard of it. Got a place, good concept. You know, what do you do?
You invite us in.
Okay.
And we try to learn everything we can about your vision for this restaurant. The menu.
You. I mean, a lot of it is the chefs that we represent. They have all these amazing ideas for their restaurants, but they also have a whole cool story behind why they started this and why they want to do this cuisine, whether it's their heritage. You know, like we work with Dale, who I know you guys are close with. And
love Dale.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of his restaurants have a lot of Filipino and Asian American style cuisines on there, and something that's very close to his heart. So like when we started working with him, we wanted to make sure we got that message across to people about how passionately he felt with his family.
Yeah, we want to tell your story.
Can you launch a restaurant these days without a story? I mean, can you launch anything without a story? If the food is really amazing and it's like these talented chefs, but it's just like, this is just their next restaurant. Like, do you need a story? I mean, yes. I mean, if you need one, I get that, but
I would just have to say on almost anything, you would need a story. Music, food, literature, any, like.
Okay.
But
point in case that J.K. Rowling book, that she released underneath a pseudonym, which didn't do. It was a great book. No one read it. It got leaked, and then next day it was like number one seller.
Okay, but
same
this
book.
So I take it as a yes. Yes.
I just don't think anybody's restaurant comes out of nowhere.
Exactly.
Okay.
Our boss says all the time, and I couldn't agree with her more, that you don't choose the restaurant industry. The restaurant industry chooses you.
When did you feel that that happened to you guys? Like, at what point did you feel...
I was a kid. I was like 18 and working in restaurants, and I just thought I was so cool because I got to cook and I got to hang out with all my friends, and it's a lot of hours, but you don't do it for nothing. So like your passion has to come from somewhere, and I think that's what we meant by their story is that whether they're cooking Mediterranean food, we have a chef that we work with in DC who has cooked Italian food his whole life but married a Greek woman and learned from her Tia Olga how to make phyllo dough in like some basement. Like, I think that's an incredible story that we like to tell people.
So you get the story, you get all the materials, and then is it like a 6 week? Because I know that the news cycle is so fast these days, and you don't want to start, because you run that risk, is like you start talking about a restaurant, it's coming, it's almost here, and then you're like, oh, they've been talking about the opening of this restaurant for 6 months and we're bored already.
Yeah.
I mean, you need at least a month.
Okay.
You need to get the publicist at least a month.
At least a month.
At least a month.
And that's before your opening date. Because, you know, there's always things that happen, whether it be, like, the health company has to come in or the hoods are not working. There's always, you know, some opening crisis where they didn't get the glassware in time. So, no, they're going to open a restaurant. Nobody's going to have a cup or something like that.
And how hard do you have to vet these chefs? Like, are you tell me all your skeletons, like, what might come out, or it doesn't ever get that deep?
It doesn't get that deep.
No, but I think
not Darren. Chefs with skeletons?
I mean, I know they all have skeletons. I'm just wondering.
I mean, we don't
look, you said,
I heard look, they have unstructured lives.
You said you try and learn everything about them. And do you ever ask questions like, is there something that's going to come out during the launch of the restaurant that might derail?
I'm not running for president.
I don't know.
It's not TMZ.
They're opening up a taco shop in Brooklyn.
Look, I just finished House of Cards. I'm just wondering.
All right. We're going to play a song.
Okay. We're going to play a song, and then I want to hear some not war stories, but just some industry stories of, like, successes, good moments.
Yeah.
So we have Shannon and Marcus from Bullfrog and Baum. Shout out to Jennifer, JB.
Shout out to Jennifer.
Shout out to all the ladies kicking it at Jubilee today. 1,000 food women in the house, networking.
I love it.
Supporting.
Making moves.
Making moves.
Is it really because of that Times cover?
100%.
Wow, that's amazing.
They were going to do it. The story that I heard is that they were going to do it like next year. It's hosted by Cherry Bomb Magazine, which is all about women and food. And then that Times article came out that didn't mention one woman in the entire article. Which, what I don't understand is how no one called that out.
Who wrote the article?
I don't know who wrote the article.
I bet it was a dude.
I'm sure it was, but like, there's no one on the staff who was like, hey, should we have like a woman? Like, anyone.
I mean,
tokenism is so horrible.
Are you saying that because we're Jewish?
I'm black.
So we're here and we're talking about the stories behind the scenes. You know, a lot of things that people don't know about when you're at a restaurant is the army of publicists and agents and
the people behind the phrase. Oh yeah, I just heard about this great place.
Yeah. So, can you share a story about launching a restaurant? No names are needed, and it can be all positive, but just like something where you felt, you know, it was come from behind, you know, handicapped restaurant that succeeded super well.
I'm trying to think. I mean, we have a lot of good stories, definitely, from doing this, from being on the food PR side and from being in the industry just in general. But I don't want to say necessarily anybody had like a serious handicap to overcome when they opened their restaurant. They were all, because so much passion does go into opening these projects, that they're so well thought out by the time they actually do open. And that's what I think like we help with a lot, is getting the correct messaging out and making sure that their vision is fully realized by everybody else.
It's a very political answer.
That's so political.
Yeah, it's so, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, people can listen to this episode and be like, chefs can be difficult.
you
don't have to say it.
They really love email. I'm just kidding. I was like, that's probably one of the funniest
things. Have you had to like just go down to the restaurant and like get in their face?
No, but sometimes they've ignored my calls when I'm like, no, but I really, really need that recipe from you. But a lot of them don't check their emails. And, you know, I definitely understand it from a very different perspective, because I was there, I would get yelled at if I had my phone on the line with me. So they don't have their phones on them very often.
Right.
Like, I know they're big into the Instagram, the Twitter these days, so they might have it on a little bit more often than they did before. But I text a lot of them.
Yeah.
It's the fastest way to get information, for them to take photos and to send it to me. And
selfie.
Yeah. Oh, that was actually a question I had to ask somebody recently. I'm like, can you take a kitchen selfie for me?
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'll give you one guess who did it.
Dale?
Yeah.
You have a story about Dale, right?
Oh, yes. My favorite story was, I was still pretty new to his account, and my team, Marcus, and a few of our coworkers were down in D.C. Trying out one of our new restaurants down there.
Shout him out.
They were down there, I think they were for Blue Jacket or Iron Gate, which is part of Neighborhood Restaurant Group, who has an incredible beer program down there. We're learning so much about beer. I didn't even know. Do you know what a cool ship is?
I don't.
Because I just found this out the other day.
What's a cool ship?
It's like an antique way of making beer where they like cool the wort down in these huge troughs.
Massive.
And like massive.
Oh.
But they're one of the few breweries in the U.S. that
like
has one.
I thought it was like a beer shot combo.
It does. Cool ship, not cool shot.
No, I know. I know. Like a, I don't know, an ice, natty ice or something like that.
Does it change the way the beer tastes, or is it just...
Yeah, I mean, they have an incredible selection on tap down there. I just went down there, I guess it was in November, and sampled a bunch of the different ones that they have. They have this incredible one that they make with a smoked salt, which is really interesting. Oh. Learning a lot about craft beer.
Craft beer. So you get a call from Dale.
Oh, yes. So my whole team is out of the office, and I'm still pretty new, so I want to make sure I'm doing everything right. And this was the day after Guga Muga, I think it was.
Yeah.
And apparently he had been riding his bike back to the restaurant and was distracted by something he saw on the street and crashed his bike into the back of a car, dislocating his shoulder. He was supposed to be flying to Seattle the next day to do an event out there and had a few segments, but he had to bring a sous chef with him to assist with like prepping for things because he had like totally messed up his shoulder.
Oh my God.
But Dale. That was a really fun call to get the next day. I was like, what do you mean you dislocated your shoulder?
Yeah, I don't understand.
I'm like, are you in a sling? And then I had to call my whole team and explain to them what happened. And they're like, so can he do TV segments still? Is he going to be okay?
I like the concern. None of those concerns were about his health. It was just like, can the machine keep going?
Yeah.
Wait, one very important detail to that story.
Yes.
That, Dale, I hope you forgive me for sharing this. But when I spoke to him after his fall, he said the very first thing he had to do after he got back on his bike and made it to Pork Slope was use the bathroom, because he hit himself that hard.
Wow. Oh.
His glasses were crooked.
Wow.
But so those are just some of the fun things that we get to deal with. And I mean, a lot of these people, we spend so much time with them that they do become our friends.
They're friends.
I mean, this is kind of off of your question, but like, what is a crisis moment
that you guys have to do it. Like, I mean, that's like a funny story.
I mean, that's as close to crisis as I think we actually get.
Right.
There's nothing that dramatic that ever happens. I think I had a chef sprain his ankle once, but...
I like how we're trying to ask questions like this is like the presidency.
Because we all watch way too much House.
I know.
It's PR, not ER.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. That's another great quote we got. Yes.
Oh, that's an actual...
KBF. That,
yeah.
Publicist lingo.
So what are the moments looking back on your career that is a real high five, great moment where you go, this was awesome. This is like, where did you really celebrate? Because I know that we could all get caught up in the one foot for the other. When did you take a moment back and be like, this is amazing?
I had a really awesome, the first like big event I coordinated for one of our chefs was the chefs are based out of Philadelphia, Mark Vetri and his chef.
Shout
Adam.
Out. Former Snacky Tunes guest and musician.
Yes. Incredible musician.
Shreds.
Because, you know, he's not good enough at just making amazing Italian food. He also can play.
Shreds. He's on Snacky Tunes Comp Volume 2, which you can actually get on the Heritage SoundCloud page.
Really, really pushing it.
Well, when you call it out like that, it becomes yeah. less seamless. But
so shout out to Mark Vetri and the Philly crew. Shout out to the Flyers. They're picking up a point today. Push to the playoffs. Anyway.
But yeah, the first big event I think I coordinated for them was at Tasting Table.
Okay.
And I don't get to see them as often as I'd like because they are in the city and I see my New York City chefs a lot more often.
Yeah.
And I got to hang out with them for a few hours and they did a few demos with the team there and I went to go get coffee with them and it was the first time I had actually felt like I fully understood them. Like, I mean, you can read so much about chefs and
yeah.
you can speak to them on the phone and I speak to half these guys more than I speak to my own parents, but that was the first time I just was so wowed actually getting to taste their food and having like the experience that so many people do with him. And it makes you feel really proud to represent somebody that is that talented and that cares so strongly about what they do for a living.
And you know, a lot of times when you you know, work with journalists and get some of these the chef stories out there and you know, a chef sees their restaurant in the newspaper or mm-hmm. on a blog, and they call you up and thank you for you know, your hard work. It makes it, you know, it's a very rewarding feeling, and like moments like that are cause for celebration. When you know you've worked really hard to put that shelf out there and really tell his or her story. It's nice.
As we move into the future of food PR, I know that even like the last few years with like Instagram and Twitter, it's a whole different game. What are the new trends? Like what's happening? Like what's really important for chefs to do now? Like, is it super important that they just have to have an online presence the whole time? Or is it about like getting out there but then making sure the food's good? Or is it just you got to have everything?
I think it's just so much more involved to be a chef these days. I feel like before chefs, you know, weren't really on TV and now they have so many TV opportunities and some of them are not as sociable as everybody else might be. So I think Instagram's huge for food, especially if you learn how to take like a decent food photo. Because when's the last time you looked at something and you're like, ah, oh, man, like I really want to eat that.
Yeah.
Daniel Krieger's. Shout out to Jordan Krieger Hoffman.
Yeah.
But what just came out? Everything was shot on his iPhone.
Gatto, wasn't it? Didn't he do Gatto's photos?
No, it got.
But I've also seen how the sausage is made by eating with them. It's very, but it takes a lot. But the photos are beautiful.
Yeah,
he takes some awesome photos.
I saw this one photo of his that was like literally like this. It was like a plate of food in the shadows that was just like so beautiful and haunting.
Daniel
and
Krieger, I was like, shout out
to
follow
Daniel
him on Instagram.
Yeah, he has beautiful food shots.
So it's
and people shots. My favorite is still the one he did for Eater with the ladies of Miss Lily's.
Mm.
Oh yeah, he's great. So it's all about social things like that. Is there anything that you see on the horizon? What's of a new sort of social trend or something that people need to do?
I feel like the lower price point tasting menus are really making a comeback.
Yeah,
where it's not so much $100 and you sit there for, or over $100 and you sit there for several hours. There's a lot of people doing like much lower priced tasting menus, and it's easier to sit there for 2 hours and have a great meal and a great glass of wine, but it's not your whole night, I guess. So.
Yeah, the meeting point between casual and fine dining and like bringing those two worlds closer together.
Great. Well, we want to thank you for joining us. If you had to pick one social media for people to follow you on, what would you guys say? Shout it out.
Probably our Instagram. Bullfrog has a really great one.
Yes.
We've been working on a lot.
And the Instagram is?
Bullfrog and Baum.
Great.
B-A-U-M. Is that a... ampersand? Is that a...
That is an A-N-D. You can't ampersand things on social media. We found this out.
Or email.
It messes with the code. That stuff. All right.
Guys.
Thanks for coming by. Hope
thanks
we
for having
around.
Us. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
So we have a packed house.
Real family affair.
Real family affair. Real family affair. We have the Jenkins family here. And Rich Jenkins, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you, Greg.
You know, after Cassandra told us about you on her episode, we're like, yeah, we have to have that guy in. So if you didn't get a chance to check out her episode, do you want to give a brief history of why we would potentially find you so intriguing and want to talk to you?
Well, Cassandra is a singer, songwriter, performer, and with Sam Owens has a band.
Yeah.
Cassandra Jenkins. So that's fairly consistent with our family history. Sandra, who's here also, is a bass player. We had a band for many years. Stephanie has a band, and our son Reed has a band called Morningsiders.
Now, is there a family band?
Yeah. It's kind of flies in the night and appears on random days, but we actually have a performance on April 20th.
Amazing. And you guys did family bus trips, right?
Well, when the bus was running.
When the bus... What was the bus? Did the bus have a name?
The bus... I don't think the bus has a name. No. Gus the bus.
There we go. Sandra, you can get on the mic right there, too, if you want to jump in there. It is a family affair. So, I mean, Cassandra did tell us about the trips, but how did the trips, like, come about? Like, what age were the kids? Like, where did you get the idea? It's like, this is a great way to spend our summers.
Or did you show up with the bus one day at home, and you're like, honey, I have a bus?
Kind of.
Well, kind of. What happened.
Yeah, kind of.
He came to my workplace, which... I'm a teacher, and he dangled a set of keys in front of me, and it had a wooden little sculpture of a bus. And I said, "What is this?" He said, "It's bus keys." I said, "Oh, bus keys. Okay, well, and it's a 54...
56. 56 GMC.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, isn't it broken down somewhere? Was that the story?
Yeah.
It's like...
Allegedly. Allegedly, it's broken down. It has a fairly short operating range right now.
Okay.
Okay.
From, like, where it's parked to where it's parked?
No, where it's parked, it goes a mile and a half.
Okay.
And then I wait and drive it back.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No.
So how did...
It did make it all the way to Maine to a festival that we go to every year.
Okay.
As a family.
Did it make it back?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
It did. Yeah. There and back.
So how did you get into music? Is music just in your family and your parents and your grandparents?
No, it's not in my family. It would be nice. It's in this family.
It's in this family.
Yeah.
Skips a generation, right?
I come from a family of farmers and veterinarians.
Okay.
And not really related to music that much.
But they work with their hands?
Yes, and they work with their brains.
Yeah.
But I started as a small child. Both my grandmothers had pianos in their parlors.
Okay.
So we would visit grandma, and I would pound on a piano. So it got to be at around age 7. My brother, my sister, and I at that age all started taking piano lessons for me. It stuck, much to my parents'
chagrin.
Yeah. And I did a lot of other things, but I always came back to music. It's hard to explain why people are drawn to music. It's probably like food.
Yeah.
Like Shannon said, she went to the kitchen and there she wanted to stay. I went to the piano and there I wanted to stay there.
So how many instruments do you play?
I play basically piano and trumpet, and I own an accordion.
Okay. Okay. Does anybody in the family play that accordion?
Dad does.
Yeah. But mostly I own it. Yeah.
Mostly you own it.
Yeah.
So how did you get, or what was your start in playing in the city?
Start playing in the city started where I'm from, which is Catskill, New York.
Oh, yeah. Borscht Belt. That's where
actually not.
That's where our parents met.
Uh-huh. Well, it's related in a way, but Catskill, the village of Catskill.
Oh, the village. Okay.
Is on the Hudson.
Right.
Okay. And it's mostly the famous people from Catskill are Rip Van Winkle. Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, different. Of course.
And Mike Tyson.
Oh, okay. One of the same.
Yeah.
So, don't really think about one without the other.
Really, when you think about it.
He's in a pod.
So, like the Borscht Belt, there are a lot of resorts. After World War II, people would come up out of New York to actually have a little vacation in a place that felt like home. So, in the Borscht Belt, where the resorts are Jewish, in the northern Catskills, the resorts are German, Irish, Italian, French. There was an Armenian resort.
Don't forget the Irish.
Oh, did I skip Irish?
Yes.
So sorry. It's Irish is big. They call it the 33rd county.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, so I started when I was 16 playing in these resorts.
And what was the music you were playing?
Well, in the German places, I played polkas. And in the Italian places, I played Italian music, Ave Maria.
Oh, yeah.
And the Irish places, the Irish places played half Irish and half top 40.
Okay. Let's hear a song.
Okay. I was trying to think of a way to tie this in, but
yeah,
I think I got it.
Okay. Here we go.
First of all, thank you guys for putting music and food in the same show.
Hey, our pleasure.
Yeah, they quite often go well together. Sometimes not. But this song is about the day and about love. It could be about food, but I think it's about people. I need a Sunday kind of love, the kind that lasts past Saturday night. I got to know it's more than love at first sight. I need a Sunday kind of love. I need a love that's on the square. Can't seem to find somebody to care. I'm on a lonely road that leads me nowhere. I need a Sunday kind of love. I do all my Sunday dreaming and all my Sunday scheming every minute, every hour of the day. I'm hoping to discover a certain kind of lover to show me the way. I need some me warm on Saturday night. I know I know it's more than love at first sight. I need a Sunday kind of love. I need a Sunday kind of love.
Oh my God. Oh, there it is.
I haven't heard that in like 3 years.
So, how many songs do you know by heart?
Oh, that's a good question, and I'm not sure. Sometimes people ask for a song, and if I heard it enough, I can reproduce
right.
it. Not necessarily all the lyrics, but people always remember the tune more than you remember the lyrics.
Right. So, how many notes do you need? Or how many bars do you need hummed?
If I know the title, that's enough.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. It happened to me yesterday. I know the first 16 bars, and then you get to the bridge. Then you get a little more. You just sing me a little more.
Yeah.
And then into the next 8, and then repeat the first 8, and there you are.
I've always had this vision of when I think of New York, of 4 a.m., somewhere in Midtown, piano player, bow tie undone. Has that been you?
Yeah, it has been. More downtown than Midtown.
More downtown. Yeah. But and then just nameless piano guy and this Broadway or some someone belting and things like that.
Yeah, all
so
of that.
What brought you leaving Catskills? Well, when did you get down to the city and start playing the city?
Well, we backed acts. This was a tail end of the really tail end of the vaudeville era.
But
the Catskill Resorts used the vaudeville formula. They had a comedian, a singer, maybe a novelty act, juggler. And we would back the act. We have 45-minute rehearsal, play the show, and away you go. One of the acts we became friends with, he introduced us to a ship line, Holland American Line. We worked on a ship line. Then we came to New York, backed his album, and we backed an audition for his show for a club on Mulberry Street.
Oh, wow.
Called SPQR.
Okay.
You
want to give us a year? What year?
It was 1980.
Okay.
And we were actually on our way to California at the time, but this was closer, so we came here. We played an audition at a club on 46th Street, Ted Hook's on stage. And the owner liked our band, so he hired us.
Amazing. How did you feel to play your first gig in New York?
I was very exciting.
How old were you?
Early 30. I think I was 29, 30.
That's amazing.
About your age.
Well, I'm a little bit older now.
Yeah, well, aren't we all?
Aren't we all? Every minute. So you're in New York, and what was the scene like then? So this is the early 80s.
Well, an indication that the club was owned by a man named Matty the Horse.
Okay. So he was into racing?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so a lot of made men.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Allegedly. I don't see nothing. I don't know nothing.
A lot of people spend a lot of time in the men's room.
Right. A lot of cash.
Yeah.
A lot of cash.
Yep.
So what's the vibe like? I mean, like I said, I always have this vision of like 70s, 80s New York of just these the piano guy.
Yeah. And what are they asking? And what are you playing at this time? Like what
are you playing? Like Italian standards?
No, we knew a few, but they weren't they weren't timely. What we were doing at the time was what we called nostalgia vocals. It was from the 30s and the 40s, and it was a trio. We had three part harmony, and we were obviously not from New York.
Okay,
we were obviously not from Mulberry Street. So, but people liked us, and we played what we did. They had more of the same. They had a nightclub upstairs, and we played for dancing and entertainment. Then the act came on. Sometimes there was a house band also, and then we played between the shows. There was another show, and then we played after the show. It was a long day.
So how many gigs per or how many shows per week?
We did 6 nights a week, wow. From about 8 o'clock till about 4 in the morning.
Do they feed you?
No, we went next door for coffee, and then we went to Lucy Jung's on Canal Street for dinner afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah. We usually got home when the sun came up.
Yeah, a lot of sunrises?
A lot of sunrises. After hours clubs. This was the 80s.
Oh, man.
It was fun.
Was it fun?
It was fun.
Yeah?
It was before we had kids.
Do you have any like stories, anything from that era that sticks out as like a night to remember that you're okay with sharing in front of your kids?
Sam, tell me out here.
There were a lot of times when celebrities came in.
Oh yeah, what celebrity? Drop us some early '80s celebrities.
Peter Allen.
Okay.
One of our favorites, and we would go see him, and he came in and did a show. I'll tell you a story.
Okay.
One night, there was a place on 52nd Street called Jimmy Weston's. And that's where everybody would go after going to SBQR. So one night, some of the boys invited us to go with them. You know, it's like you see we see pictures of the Andrews sisters.
Yeah.
Out with older men.
Yeah.
Well, we were the Lynx trio out with older guys.
Right.
You know, and I have to say, we were always treated with great respect there.
Right.
Nobody ever hit on Sandy. Our drummer had a girlfriend. They always respect that. And so we never got a weird feeling on Mulberry Street. Nicely treated. So up we go to Jimmy Weston's. They invite us to sit in with a band. Tommy Furtado was the band. Mm-hmm. Nice, great band. Sat in with a band. And then one of the guys comes over. He said, you know, would you like to meet somebody? I said, yeah, who? He says, Frank Sinatra. He's over in the corner. So we went over and, you know, paid our respects and kissed the ring and that thing. And never forget it.
Oh, you shook Sinatra's hand. You shook Sinatra's hand? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. That's not where I thought.
It's pretty great.
That's pretty great. Let's just play a song.
Yeah, let's just hear a song.
You want to do a Sinatra song? You want to do something?
Let's see.
Look, I know it's a birthday request, but if you know my way.
That's not a good one.
Okay.
give me a second choice.
that's life?
Yeah.
One that you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, became a beer commercial. Someday, when I'm awfully low and the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight. Oh, but you're lovely, with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft. There is nothing for me but to love you and the way you look tonight. With each word, your tenderness grows. Tearing my fear apart, and the laugh that wrinkles your nose touches my foolish heart. You are lovely, never ever change. Keep that breathless charm, won't you please arrange it, 'cause I love you and the way you look tonight, and the way you look tonight. So,
we have a sound effect.
Yeah.
So wait, welcome back. Welcome back, Jack Inslee.
Jack Inslee
found the sound effect.
And shout out to Joe, who's left to go on to be a rock star.
Yeah, well done.
What's your favorite room to play in New York?
Boathouse in Central Park.
Why?
Because
it's you need very, a why? You need a reason for that?
I need his reason. I need. I'm a professional interviewer.
Oh, you need his reason.
Yeah, okay. I need his
unlike,
reason.
Unlike some people.
Yeah.
Not naming names.
Not naming names. I'm looking at you. So why do you love playing there?
The setting is gorgeous. The atmosphere is informal. It's when people say, "How's the food?" I said, "Better than it has to be."
True. Good answer.
People, the piano sits on the bar level, and as people walk in, they see the lake for the first time. You can't see it from outside, really. There's trees and fences, and they walk past the wall, and they come right to the piano and see the lake at the same time. And people are totally disarmed.
Yeah.
They just go, whoa, because there's boats rowing and the gondolier, Andres the gondolier.
It's like a perfect New York moment.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit of a fantasy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's real, but it's like a little bit of the piano player, Central Park.
Right in the middle of the park, and you forget you're in New York. You forget you're anywhere. It's gorgeous. So, and they know how the music fits in with the food. It's not a competition.
So, I mean, you've been in cities since the 80s, and we all know things change, but, like, how has it changed? And how have you been able to stick with it for over three decades?
I've changed what I do a lot. When we came, obviously, we had a trio. We were singing. We were entertaining a lot more. And now, most of the places where I work, they want live music because they know it makes a difference. It personalizes, it relaxes, it's kind of a steroid for the atmosphere. But they don't want entertainment because that distracts from the chef. Mm. So that's what I do, that's changed. There's an expression, there's music, then there's the music business.
Right.
One has nothing to do with the other.
Of course.
Then there's the music business and there's show business. So sometimes they cross over, but not necessarily. If you're in music and you get to put on a show, that's an added. It's a different business for one thing, but it's an added. You get a boost from that.
Do you play any restaurants?
Yes. Yeah. I play at Del Posto restaurant.
That little
ever heard of that?
Watch it. Watch that one. That's a beautiful room.
Yes,
that's
it is. And, place. And I understand they don't hire any PR people.
They don't.
Because they got their PR person.
They got their PR. So, do you play any like hotel bars? Are you like?
This was kind of a timeline.
Yeah.
Our son Reed, I mentioned him before. Mm-hmm. He was born. In 1991, I started playing at the St. Regis Hotel, the exact same year. When he turned 22, they discontinued their music policy, which that happens.
That happens.
Yeah, it happens. But I played there 22 years continuously.
Do you have a story from there you want to share?
Let's see. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Someone else said it. I felt like I was going to have to be the guy who asked about Piano Man, but...
Well... This was in the 90s.
Okay.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yeah. He didn't know who he was.
Yeah. So Billy Joel was staying at the St. Regis. He's Billy Joel. He can stay wherever he wants.
Stay wherever he wants.
And staying at the St. Regis during the River of Dreams.
Okay.
And so I was playing. He came in, looked at the piano. He said, "Hey, move over." So I moved over and we played a duet. And
wow.
that was fun. And then just by coincidence, my parents walked in. They live up in Catskill, and they used to come to New York quite a bit. They came in and they sat down. He went over and talked to them. He says, "Where are you from?" He said, "Catskill." He says, "Well, I know where Catskill is because I docked my boat there. It has the best harbor on the river."
I mean, that's common knowledge. It's common knowledge.
If you have a 70-foot yacht,
of course,
it is
Catskill. Yeah.
And I was very thankful because he was very gracious to them. And we played a lot of tunes together. And we didn't actually do Piano Man.
But do you relate to that song? When that came out?
Oh, yeah.
What was your experience the first time that came out and you heard it?
I was playing in a restaurant upstairs, or upstate rather, and people came in, so you got to learn this song. Got to learn this song. So I just learned this song,
right?
And it's a great song.
Great song.
It tells a great story, and pretty much, I mean, Billy Joel has a way of telling a story.
Yeah.
The story I got from that restaurant is a guy came up to the piano and he said, "Play Bésame Mucho," and he pulled out a gun.
What?
And I said, "Bésame, bésame mucho." That was a restaurant in Catskill.
I want to make sure that we have time for one more song. Last question is, what is the song you get requested the most?
It used to be Stairway to Heaven.
Really? Oh my God! I thought that was like a bad joke.
Yeah, that was a bad joke, but yeah. It's as time goes by.
Yeah,
yeah.
Time goes by. Yeah. What's a song that? All right, I'm gonna do two questions. Hold on. Song you get requested that you hate playing, and song that you get requested that you love to play. Oh, that's good.
Most of the songs I do, I really like.
Yeah.
Stairway to Heaven. No. I mean, it's a great song. And when you deconstruct it,
yeah,
you realize what a great and a great band. But it's really hard to make some of these things work on piano.
Favorite song? Favorite song to play?
There's a lot of them. One of them I just did, the way you look tonight.
Beautiful
yeah,
song.
Yeah. I love As Time Goes By.
Let's end on that. You want to end on that?
Sure.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming on, the whole Jenkins clan. So you guys are playing. Were you guys playing on the 20th?
We're playing at the Brooklyn Folk Festival. It's at the Bell House.
Oh, amazing. And great venue.
It is. And we're doing a Pete Seeger tribute. And Stephanie is spearheading this effort because she plays the banjo.
Yeah, I was going to say, you walked in. I saw you out there with the banjo. I was like, she has to be a Jenkins. I don't want to say. Shout out to Shannon Marcus. Thank you.
Thank you.
B&B forever. We'll be back next week. You won't be back.
I'll be back in mid-May.
Be back in mid-May.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Jack, good to see you, too.
Good to see you, too. All right, here we go. We'll see you guys next week.
Oh, wait. What? How can people find you?
Oh, yeah.
At the Boathouse on the weekends. I have a very small web presence because I'm pretty much fully employed, happy to say.
Yeah.
When that whole world became available, I didn't have that much time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you need.
But some, soon.
If you need some PR, I have some people right here.
Yeah, give me a restaurant gig. That's what I need.
All right. Well, thank you guys. We'll see you next week.
Thanks very much. You must remember this: a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you, on that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs, never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, man must have his mate. On that you can rely. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. Lovers, as time goes by.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.